Welcome to the Mother Love Podcast. This is Claire Larson, your host, and this project was made possible because of the support of Healthy Mothers, Healthy Babies, the Montana Coalition. Mother Love was created to promote healing, connection, and shared wisdom through stories. Like any given day spent parenting, each episode brings a balance of tears, laughter, wonder, and surrender. When it comes to parenting, no one should go it alone. On Mother Love, we see you, we hear you, we're in this together. Hey, dear Mother Love listeners. It's Claire, your host, and just wanted to come on before this interview to let you know that this will be our final interview of season two, and then we're going to take a little break and learn and reflect and decide what we might want to do for season three. And so just thank you so much to everyone who has listened and given support to the guests on the podcast. And of course, thank you to all the guests who have bravely shared their stories. I'm just so happy that we have this place where people can speak openly and safely about their experiences. So hope you have a great summer and you'll catch us again in the fall. I'm here today with Kitty Aki Berkland, and I'm not going to go too much into like a big, huge introduction because, I mean, awesomely, you also have a podcast.
Yes.
So Kitty Aki, you know how this goes. And in that way, I'm going to have you just describe a little bit about who you are, the work you do, and how you continue to engage and invest in moms.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. This is so fun. And it's fun to be on a podcast that specifically reaches Montana moms, because I lived in Montana for a solid 5 years. And that's where I met my husband. And he's the reason that I am a mom today. So Montana has a really special place in my heart. But yeah, my name is Kitty Aki. I'm a mom of two little boys and married to the love of my life. We're living in Utah right now. But yeah, it's just been a really fun, I use the term fun loosely, motherhood journey. The beginning was very rough, but here I am now loving my life. I would not have changed anything. I would not do anything differently.
Yeah, which is so amazing, because we'll go a little bit more into your story, but I've talked to so many moms who feel that way and have had such incredibly challenging paths and things to overcome. And it almost seems like when you're in it, it's like so hard that you don't want to say, oh, someday I'll look back and appreciate this, because mm-hmm. It's like, no, I just don't want this to be happening like this at all.
Yeah.
But it's always amazing to me that there are so many moms who look back and they're like, yep, it was really hard. And it made me the resilient mom I am today.
And the woman I am today. And, you know, I was reading a study on happiness, and it was saying that essentially just pleasurable moments, like piling on these happy moments is not what creates happiness, but it's resilience and it's overcoming things and it's giving of yourself. It's all the things that parenthood is.
Yeah.
And it's coming out on the other side and feeling fulfilled and feeling like your life has meaning and purpose in addition to pleasurable moments. But I think if you go into this thinking it's going to be a picnic, it's not, but it's so rewarding that it creates this deep joy and happiness that you kind of have to go through the fire sometimes to get to the other side to enjoy the sweet fruit. But yeah, it's no joke for sure.
Yeah. So we're talking about resilience, and it's becoming more and more of a common idea. But I think that when I look back at my own momming journey and just how muddy everything seemed and heavy everything seemed. And if you would have come to me, like, you know, and come into my house and I was isolated and depressed and said, like, hey, do you want to maybe just like skip the next year? I'd be like, yep.
Yeah.
But now when you look back, like, I was thinking of this analogy when I used to study yoga. We talked about how they did this experiment in Canada, and the scientists were growing all different types of plants and trees, and like kind of like a biodome type situation, but not quite. They were trying to create artificially the same environment where things could thrive. So these trees kept growing, and they would grow beautifully. They would get really tall. And eventually, though, they would just collapse and topple over. And what they discovered was that like the bark and the structure of the trees itself
couldn't withstand a certain amount of wind because it hadn't been exposed to enough of the elements to grow that
build
strength.
Resiliency. Yes, yeah. I love that analogy. Yeah. I feel like so often we want to hate on the process. We want to skip the pain. Nobody wants to feel pain. It doesn't feel good, obviously, but all of the resilience, all of the character building, all of the treasures that come through the pain. You have to kind of go through the fire sometimes to get to the other side. And I feel so grateful for my pain and for my storms, as it were, because it brought me to who I am today. It brought me to a deeper level of appreciation of my life, more strength, more resiliency. And if you want, I can go into exactly what happened in my motherhood journey, if that helps.
Yeah.
Kind of clarify things. Okay. So basically when I became a mom, it was a really rough transition for me. I joke sometimes that I won the postpartum lottery because I had literally every mental disorder you can have after having a baby. I had postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, postpartum psychosis, PTSD. And so my mind was not in a good place. But in addition to that, I struggled really, really difficulty with breastfeeding. That was a whole thing. My son was losing a ton of weight because I could not produce milk, which obviously when your body's in turmoil, it cannot do the things it's supposed to do. But I also was suffering from two very rare physical conditions, levator myalgia and vaginismus, which are, they're very rare. But they're not super uncommon because some women who experience sexual trauma also, it's that type of thing where your nerves and your muscles are damaged from the impact and from the trauma that goes on in your pelvic floor. And so they're all kind of tangled together and they're firing all the time. So I was going through this extreme pain all the time, just chronic pain. I couldn't walk. I couldn't wear pants. I couldn't have sex. It was just terrible. And I did 2 years of internal physical therapy and going to doctors and specialists and putting this and that up there and using all kinds of apparatuses and medications, and nothing was working. And so this was a very isolating time for me because not one mom I knew was going through what I was going through. And because of the pain, it kind of postponed the bonding period with my son. I was not able to bond with him for 18 months. It was just, I wasn't really able to get out and, you know, go for walks or meet other moms or do those things. And so it was so isolating, which furthered my mental state into just this dark place.
Totally.
But I did eventually recover. And it was by God's grace and by my amazing OBGYN who knew that trauma results from two things, extreme pain and a loss of control. So when I had my second son, it was funny because my internal therapist had said, you know, some women do reverse the damage when they have a second child. And I was like, yeah, right. I was freaking out in my mind, like, how am I ever going to deliver this baby when I'm so damaged downstairs? And I thought I'd have to just do a C-section. And my doctor was like, I believe you can still do this, but we need to completely manage the pain. And you need to have full control over every single thing. Like the doctor, so we had an induction, everything was controlled. She made sure every single aspect was controlled. And I kid you not, Claire, the second my second son came out, everything was reversed. It was the first time in 2 years I did not have any pain. My mind felt clear for the first time. I was like, what is going on? And I didn't believe it. So even after my doctor checked me, she was like, I think you're better. I said, no, I'm going to go back to my, you know, PT and just double check. And my physical therapist was like, dude, you're better. And I was just like, and then I came to find out years later, I found a study. It's called a redemptive birth. And they studied thousands of women who, if they had a traumatic birth, if the second birth with the pain was managed, and again, they felt in control, it reversed the damage. And so I experienced that. And it was just so healing for me because of I had so much trauma with the first one. But yeah, all of that brought me where I am today.
Yeah. And I want to know more, a little bit more about this redemptive birth research, because that comes up all the time when I'm interviewing women. And it was certainly my experience between my first birth and my second birth.
Really?
Yeah, totally. And I think it's interesting because, like, it's, you know, it's addressing the loss of control I felt with my first as well. But then I had a cesarean with my first baby and vaginal birth after with my second. Okay. And I did right away know, like, there's some knowing in me that was like, if we can do this together, like, it's going to heal me. I know that it is.
Wow. And you knew that.
I did. I knew, just because I knew it was like a second chance, right? And I feel conflicted about that sometimes, because I have close friends who they only got one shot. Like, they couldn't, they don't have that chance to have a redemptive birth experience. And I wonder, when you were learning about that, like,
so in the studies that I read, it was specifically moms who had another birth, and the second birth was the redemptive birth that healed the trauma from the first. However, I don't believe that discounts women from healing. There are plenty of therapies these days that go back into traumas. For me, I did a lot of work just sitting in my trauma, sitting in the pain, praying and meditating over each emotion that came up. And there are ways to heal without having a second child. And so I don't think if you're unable to have a second child, that's it for you. You know, like, well, this is my lot in life. I think there are ways to heal, and I would pursue that if you're in that boat. I don't think it's, don't give up, never give up, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I just sometimes feel a little bit bad talking about, like, how much that second birth changed my life, because I'm like, oh, what about so-and-so? But, but I do think it's sort of like the idea of trauma and, like, even inner child work, where you go back into situations where the pain and the loss of control did happen. And you kind of just, even with your imagination, envision yourself back there, you know, doing that work, and what could have gone differently. And that could be healing too, even if it doesn't happen in real time.
And just, like, allowing yourself to feel the emotions, like, as you're in the room, I'm feeling this. Why am I feeling this? Why is this coming up? And allowing yourself to, without judgment, to allow each feeling to come, versus we panic over feelings a lot, and just the feeling itself is big enough. And then you add onto it the judgment and the stress, and then that amplifies it. And so just allowing yourself to have whatever feelings come up, I think, can be so healing too.
Yeah. Yeah. And during birth and during early motherhood, it's really easy for us to try to shelve and compartmentalize our hard feelings because of the task at hand.
Yes.
And so that it does make sense that a lot of those can go unprocessed for a while. But when we start talking about the book you created, I want to go specifically into, you know, what that does. First, though, I would just want to acknowledge, like, mom to mom, I can't imagine how hard that must have been. Just even with any chronic ailment, like, life gets small and it gets narrow, and it gets, it's like really hard to be able to let in anything else than, like, the pain.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I just...
Thank you for saying that. I feel like one thing I've learned through this pain and through other pains in my life is, like, it does shine the spotlight on you and it forces you to turn inward. But if you can resist that and love people and continue to look outside yourself, that's healing too. And when you give in to the pain and you make it all about yourself, it amplifies the pain that much more. And so I've learned to do that and tell myself, I don't care what my body's telling me. I don't care what my emotions are saying. Today I will choose to love. And that has made a huge difference in my life. But thank you for acknowledging that, because it was a very difficult time. And it's one of the most, proudest moments, I guess, is coming through that. The fact that I didn't give up and I sought healing and I worked to come on the other side, and specifically worked to love motherhood, because I hated it in the beginning because of all of the pain and everything. And I felt robbed, you know, like, I didn't know what I was expecting, but it was definitely not that. Thank you for acknowledging that.
Yeah. And when I was thinking about all of this today, and we'll talk about the book, and maybe, like, before I go on, let's just have you describe what this book that you created is, because it's, I have a million questions about brilliant idea too. So tell listeners.
Thank you. So I created this book, and it happened when I did come out of my black hole. I had the redemptive birth. I started to feel like myself again. And as I started to come into myself, I noticed that there were moms suffering all around me. There were moms physically suffering. Like, one friend just had a baby and then hemorrhaged, almost bled to death, and then went home. They said, okay, you're stable. Hemorrhaged again and had to go back and was away from her newborn. And then another friend who was suicidal and not in her right mind. And I was taking her for walks, trying to just like, hey, everything you're feeling is okay. This is going to pass. You're going to get through it. And it was just like, I was bombarded by this and I had never seen it before. And thank God for my pain, because I would not have seen it had I gone through it. So it opened my eyes and I just wanted to help. And I was like, how can I help? Because I know when you're in the throes of postpartum motherhood, you are so busy. Your hands are full constantly. Your mind is full. You're not sleeping. But one thing a lot of us do is we read to our babies. They say that we should be reading from zero on for brain development. And I thought, what's an intimate way that I can reach moms where they are? Not saying put on some pants, find a support group, do some research, but like, this is where you are. How can I meet you there? So I decided to write this book. It's called Motherhood is Big Enough. It's the first children's book for postpartum moms. And the book itself, we took 18 months. So yeah, a year and a half to really carefully craft this book to where the illustrations, the images, the words, the rhythmic cadence of everything, every single thing is designed to help the baby's brain development, eye development, social skills, language skills, cognitive skills, as well as postpartum bonding between mom and baby. We're very careful about all of that. But really what it is it's just a message for the mom who's in the throes of postpartum motherhood, when maybe you can't see a friend right now, or maybe you can't go to the spa, do these self-care things that you're used to, or all of these things that you might need and you can't access them. This little book is a little bit of love. And what's so special to me, so we put the book out on Kickstarter. It was just an idea that I thought could help. And I thought, my husband said, yeah, put it out there. You know, if it's not a great idea, you'll find out pretty quick. And so I was like, okay, I put it out there. Instantly, we were getting money, but more importantly, we were getting stories. And these moms were coming forward saying, thank you for writing this. This is my story. Moms I didn't even know, but also moms in my own family who had never talked about it, that I had not even known that they had gone through this. It was like moms were coming out of the woodwork. And so I went from maybe I'll do this project to I have to do this project. And now, cut to 2 years later, we are selling the book. It's having an amazing response. We're selling it online. We're selling it in markets. I have talked to and met hundreds of moms through this little yellow book that, even to this day, moms who bought it 2 years ago who have toddlers say they still read it every night and cry. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And their kids will pull it out. Or one mom told me the other day, when I'm stressed, my toddler gets it off the shelf and says, mommy, motherhood is big enough. And I'm like, yes. Like, we need to hear that sometimes, because we do. We put the pressure on ourselves in addition to all of the actual pressure that's on us to take care of a human life. We put all this extra pressure on ourselves to be perfect at it. And sometimes it's enough to say, motherhood is big enough today. Mm-hmm. If I don't do anything else, I love and take care for this child, and that's enough. And so that's how the book came about. That's where we are today. And it has been such a joy. It has opened so many doors for me, just into the lives of moms and postpartum moms. And just the experiences I've had through this book are so special.
Yeah, it is so brilliant.
Oh, it's thank so you. Brilliant. Claire, you're and so sweet.
Like, I had a book that I read to my first Kyla when she was really little. And right away when I saw your book, it reminded me, because this was not a book that was meant to be like for moms and for intended you. In the same way. But it was this book called All in a Day. And it was like, same thing, beautiful, simple illustration, simple words. And when I read it to her, it calmed me down. It was like a mindfulness book kind of for kids. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you know, who, when you think about how to help moms, because right away when I started to come out of my postpartum depression and everything I was going through, like the first thing you want to do is like rescue moms who are in that state.
Yes.
But I also always knew, like, I didn't even like, in terms of meeting me where I was, I definitely mm-hmm. didn't want to put on real pants to do anything,
right.
you know, even mm-hmm. a support group, even if and mm-hmm. it is important to go if you can, but also, you know, I didn't want anyone coming into my home, even like the home right. visiting lactation consultant. It just felt really intimidating. And mm-hmm. so anything that was going to be self-care, like you said, like it had to be built in.
Into
you
know, the routine.
Like
yeah.
I used to rub a little bit of lavender oil on Kyla's feet before we went to bed. And like just that, like doing that would calm me down because
That's
I was
good.
Exposed to the calming thing that was happening, right? But it really has to be like that integral.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it just becomes
it's
another thing on
done.
The to-do list.
Yeah.
And then you feel bad about not doing it. And feeling bad yeah. about not doing self-care is like the worst.
Or you feel bad about doing it. Like, oh, I'm taking away
right.
from the and this was like, this is baby care and mom care at the same time. And so that was my little love letter to moms. And yeah, it's been even to myself, I have to tell myself that message sometimes, you know, when I get overwhelmed or I get like, it's too much. And I have to tell myself, motherhood is big enough. Are you loving your kids? Are you caring for them? That's it. That's
yeah.
a job well done today. Let
yeah.
the rest go, you know?
Yeah. And when we're talking about development, you know, and that you were so intentional about making sure that the book was serving the needs of the kiddo and their developing brains. But I got to thinking about that today too. And I was thinking, we all know that there is so much to be said for these early developmental stages in a child's life, like mm-hmm. a baby's brain is being built and all the neural pathways are just starting to form. And it's really important. But then I was like, why don't we think the same thing about early motherhood?
Oh, yes.
Like early motherhood is creating all these new pathways too. And a lot of them are really negative and critical
yeah.
messages that we're internalizing. And so this book, like it changes the narrative and it challenges those
yeah.
thoughts, even if it's just for 10 minutes a day.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a new voice coming in with
mm-hmm.
new messages and ideas that can give you a little bit of grace that maybe if you hadn't even done that one reading to your kiddo that morning, like
mm-hmm.
you might not have had any other thoughts that challenged those negative beliefs. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think so. It's so important to, it's really difficult in the beginning to get a control of your thoughts. I think especially when the hormones are raging and you're going through like mental health issues. But yeah, and so having something external to help you steer the ship is so helpful because internally there's a storm going on and it's very hard to right that ship on your own. So yeah, having another voice that you're reading or you're listening to or you have a friend telling you you're enough, it's okay, you're going to do fine. Like these things matter and they seem small, but they matter.
They do matter. They matter
yeah.
because like, we're both saying if there's even just one other voice that's challenging this really consuming voice that is anxiety and depression, it like
mm-hmm.
snaps you out of it even just for a minute or lets you know that like,
mm-hmm.
oh, someone I trust sees this differently than I do. Maybe
yes.
I could be willing to accept
mm-hmm.
their perspective just for a little
yeah.
bit.
And the cool thing too is a lot of moms have told me like, I feel like you're spying on me because the illustrations, and
yes.
I have to give a shout out. The illustrator is Jenny Lynn Kinsley. She's also a mom of two who had a very difficult transition into motherhood, but she got the concept so fully when I explained it to her that people come up to me and they're like, I feel like you're spying on me. I feel like this is me. And I think that's so important because it's like, I see you and they feel seen and they feel like in that moment where they aren't having a lot of connection with friends or they're not, you know, it's very isolating. They feel seen and it feels like a little bit of a community with all the moms in the book, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's really important to have
that. They feel seen and it's interesting how like the most specific things that are happening behind the scenes that moms do every day that are just like repetitive
yeah.
over and over the
yeah.
same things, like those, you forget that those matter and that they're significant
mm-hmm.
and important.
Yeah.
And so when people read your book and there's like, you know, just give us one page.
Yeah. One page. Okay. We've got There's a lot of cute ones. I'm thinking of the actual illustrations. There's one that says, setting the table for dinner can wait. Motherhood is big enough. And the mom is breastfeeding a baby on one hand. Her feet are up on a full laundry basket on the other hand, on her free hand, she's holding a slice of pizza and there's an open pizza box and there's toys everywhere. And it's like, yeah, tonight we're not going to eat well and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, like we're going to sacrifice a little so that we have a little bit of rest and that's okay. It's okay. So, but yeah, some of the illustrations are very funny and cute.
You're
and
really
so
good.
Thank you. That's all genuine.
And it normalizes how crazy that is to try to be doing all those things at once. And it also makes you feel like, why is setting the table so hard now? Like it used to be just like easy run of the mill thing that I did every night, no big deal. And so it's sort of, this is like, well, here's why, you know, and even if it's putting a little bit of humor into it, like it is kind of ridiculous that we would be trying to line up a fork and a knife when we have like a million other things,
a million
demands on our bodies.
Yes. And, you know, I was so lucky because my physical therapist was so kind and she was a mom too. And she would tell me, now is not the time to learn a new recipe, Kitty Aki. Now is the time you like break out the paper plates if you have to. Like anything you can take off your mental load at this point, this is the time to do it. Like when you're on a sinking ship, you're not pinking out curtains. You are trying to get the ship on level C, you know? So,
right.
So that was some of the best advice I got, was to like give yourself some grace, slack off a little bit in other areas, because this one area is all consuming for a time, you know?
Yes, I do. I do know. Okay. And then, so we were just talking about how everything is going on behind the scenes as a new mom a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And I know that you previously have had experience in broadcasting. And so I wanted you to talk a little bit about that and what an incredibly drastic change that was for you in terms of identity.
You know what? Yeah. So I was a news reporter for about 5 years, and I actually worked at the CBS station, a couple of them in Montana. But it was similar and different in a lot of ways. In some ways, news reporting and broadcasting is fast paced, tons of responsibility, tons of pressure. In that way, new motherhood was like that. But the difference was that you're right, it was very public, whereas you would get feedback in real time. Viewers would call you and tell you if they didn't like something or if they did like something or if they were your biggest fans. Like everybody saw what you were doing. And so if you got accolades, it felt great. It was like, I'm doing my job well, and it gave you fuel to keep going. If you didn't do a great job, you would get, you know, the opposite. And then it's like you want to fight to get that better, but you're getting these clear markers and you're getting, you know, praise and you're being seen. And then to suddenly go into this very private, isolated, different way of life, I was lucky because I had a couple of years of transition before I had, or was it 1 year, but I had a little gap where I had a little bit of my identity crisis before kids. So already I was, I know, I was lucky.
This sounds like best case scenario. Yeah.
Yes, I know, of all the things that could.
Yeah.
But I felt like I was already starting to grapple with who am I? Because to my parents, I was the news reporter. And to my family, it was, you know, she's on TV and she's the news reporter. And it had become my identity after 5 years. And even before Montana, I had worked in the Bay Area of California, NBC 11. And so it was like, for a long time, it had been my identity. I was the news reporter. And when I left that job, I literally had to ask myself, who am I? Who am I? And then later again, as we all know, your identity shifts again when you become a mom and this little person comes out of you and they put him or her on your chest and you're like, who am I? I'm your mother. Like it doesn't, becoming a mother doesn't click in your mind right away. It's a process. So yeah, I'd say it's been a transition for me to kind of understand who I am and transition with the transition, if that makes sense. Just like I need to evolve as my identity evolves. But in some ways, this year I read a book called The Untethered Soul, and that was very Did you read that book?
Yeah, yes.
Mm-hmm. That was really helpful for me because it really put it into perspective of like, we put our identity on these things. Like, I am a news reporter. I am a mom. I am a this. When in reality, you are you. And these are things that you do or things that pieces of your life, but they're not necessarily you. And just realizing that you are the you inside and that's the person you are. So yeah, it just kind of like, I went from attaching my identity to all these different things to then realizing I love motherhood. I am a mom, but that's not just me. That could change. And I hope it never does, you know, by some traumatic event, but that could change. News reporting change. All of these things can be or are temporary, but the me who's inside is permanent. And so learning to love that person and get to know that person, that was a pivotal moment for me to really feel grounded in my identity and not to attach it to these different things. Because especially if we attach it to, I'm a good mom, mm-hmm. what happens if you have a bad day? Then who are you? So it's very fickle, and attaching it to these external things is very fickle. So I think I've gone through a big, deep existential transition in finding myself, but I do believe that I am or have found myself in that I'm really enjoying who I'm discovering inside of myself, you know?
Oh, that's so great. And in some ways it's like it sort of went full circle because you are back into broadcasting and you are taking taking those skills that you learned, but now you're using them in a really different way. And instead of like being on the news that is going into people's homes, you're in this book that's going into people's homes, you know,
and
it is having an influence over people's lives. And I think that that's so cool. It's just
cool. That I never thought about that, Claire. That's awesome because I do a podcast called the Den Mother Podcast, and moms will tell me like, I've listened to every episode. I love all the episodes. And I'm like, I didn't know if that would be silly because it's like, we'll pick one topic of motherhood, like poop, and we'll just talk about poop for an hour, like all our experiences from start to finish with poop. And it's like, just, or, you know, boobs or like whatever, all these like one word topics of motherhood. And it's broadcasting and it's finding its way into moms' ears and into their homes and into their cars. And it's just a whole new way of reaching moms, but it's a way that I feel really comfortable with. And I think possibly because of my news background or possibly those are skill sets that are innate in me, but yeah, it's been really rewarding to use my voice and my skill set towards something that I'm so passionate about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even just having, as a mom, even having podcasts to listen to like that, it makes this factor that we often experience as moms, like, oh, I'm going through things with poop. I'm going through things with boobs. I'm going through things with body image. Like, but I'm trying to handle it all on my own. And I feel so invisible in it. And when suddenly you can hear other moms laughing and talking about it, even if you, like you said, like even if you can't make it to the library for story time, like even if you are just folding laundry again, crying about like why all the socks never match, like you still have we're lucky to have the ability to tune into something that we can connect to and relate to and helps us to feel seen and validated. And that was something when I was a new mom that I was like, why is no one talking about how hard this is?
Yeah.
You know, like that wasn't even that long ago. That was 10 years ago. But I just remember being like, I feel like someone should have told me, you know? And I remember my mom being like, well, I like couldn't tell you, like you wouldn't understand. but like mainstream media wise, I do feel like what I had absorbed was that I should be picking out curtains when the sink is when the ship is sinking. Like I should be focused on how beautiful the nursery looks and what if my baby body is coming back or not. Like I really fell for all of that. And it added to my discord as a new mom, just in being like, this is not what I thought.
This is not.
I thought learning a new recipe would be like the deal. I thought that would be part of it.
I think there's so much you just said in there because I do think now it's changing, thank God. Like there is more, people are talking about it more. But especially on our podcast, the Den Mother Podcast, we try to be really careful to never say this will happen, that won't happen when we do start to talk about it, because that was the one thing that I got from moms of this is going to happen to you, then that's going to happen to you. So then when it didn't happen, or when I had a completely different diagnosis than anybody else I had known, it was extra isolating because I was saying, well, they said this was going to happen and this happened. Totally. So, and there are a myriad, as you know, so many, every baby is different. Every mom is different. Every body is different. Every experience, doctor, birth center, whatever. So there are so many variables that can happen in your labor and your delivery. And so we really try to be cognizant of that and say, this is one thing that happened to me, or this could happen, but it also could not happen. Just these are examples. And for those new moms who maybe haven't gone through it yet, it's just examples. It's not the black and white truth. But then for the moms who are going through that, if they have gone through what we went through, it's like, oh my gosh, that's me. Or, oh, I can kind of relate, but that didn't happen to me. So we kind of leave it a little open. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to just say one other thing, because a little while ago, we were talking about wanting to rescue moms when we enter that private space where they are with their babies. And I just wanted to say, with the podcast, with the book, with everything, my goal now is not to rescue moms, because I do believe the storm is so important and the fire is so important for us. But my goal now is to help moms feel loved and seen. And that's it. Like, you're going to go through this, and I hope you have a support system, and I hope there are people you can reach out to. But this process is good, you know, like, hold on, reach out for support. You're not alone. And that's the biggest thing that I think gets us to the other side, is realizing, like, I can do this. I'm stronger than I think, and I'm not alone. And so, yeah, I think this whole process is like, I often say moms run the world, you know, because this, once you get to the other side, you are so strong. Like, we're invincible, you know, we can do anything.
It's true. Yeah. And that's a good point, because if there's rescuing, then it means that, like, you're swooping in and taking someone out of a hard situation, and you're not going to bring them back. Yes. You know, because if you rescue someone, you can't, like, return them to the turmoil.
Yes.
And
right.
Be like, okay, well, I guess
okay, good luck.
The rescue's over now. Like, you're right. You have to be in it with each other. And
Yeah. And that reminds me of a little metaphor. I can't remember who said it, maybe Les Brown, but he was talking about, he told this cute little story of one day there was a caterpillar who had crawled into a chrysalis, and his aunt friend walked by and he saw the caterpillar struggling and wiggling and trying to get out. And he thought, oh, I want to help that little caterpillar. So he went and he found a sharp tool and he cut the caterpillar out, and the caterpillar died. And he didn't realize the caterpillar had to go through that process. And so, yeah, that's why I think it's so important not to rescue each other out of the process, because the process is the plan. It is the way. But to love each other and walk with each other through the process, that is what's so powerful, because it's like, you can do this and you are strong enough. And it also reminds me of, they say, a child who is always rescued when they fall learn to fall with their arms up, but a child who is allowed to fall falls with their arms in front of them. They learn to catch themselves. So it doesn't feel good the first couple times you fall, but you learn how to catch yourself and you learn how to rescue yourself. And I think that's the biggest lesson and takeaway.
Yes. And that's the perfect segue into my next question. Yay! Because as we're talking about all of this, you know, I'm reflecting on, that is still one of my biggest challenges as a mother, is to not rescue my children when they're going through something hard.
Tell me about it.
I mean, yes, but I had this inkling before we started talking that, you know, in the same way that all of your early motherhood experiences have shaped you to be kind of an advocate for other moms, it also has changed who you are as a mother. So I'm curious, like, what do you bring to your kids when they're struggling? Like, how do you, instead of rescuing them, how do you find that you're able to be with them and be more present in their hard times? And will you talk a little bit about how this has played out in your children?
Yeah, I have to preface this by saying I am not perfect at this, and I struggle with this too. But I think the earliest instances of this are temper tantrums. And it's so hard for me not to want to stop the behavior and just say, stop crying, or, you know, whatever. But in those moments, those are actually some of my favorite motherhood memories, which is weird to say that the temper tantrums are, but I would try, and more often than not, I would succeed to let them have their feelings and just scream, cry, kick, let it all out. And I would say, when you're done, I'm here if you need to talk. And if they were going to hurt themselves or others, I would hold on to them during the temper tantrum, but I would always let them complete their temper tantrum, let all the emotions out. And then I would take them out to the front porch and sit them on my lap and cuddle them. And I remember a few times when they were toddlers, they thought I would be mad at them or think, you think I'm bad. They would think those type of thoughts. And I would tell them every time, and all emotions are okay. All emotions are normal. There's nothing that would ever, ever, ever make me stop loving you. This is normal. And then to just sit with them in it and to see them like process like, okay, I'm not bad or whatever. And to them, and it's like, they do grow out of it. They do learn how to control their emotions. And we would tell them, the only reason you would get a consequence is if you allow those emotions to make your choices for you, to dictate how you're going to behave, to if you use those to say hit your brother or you do something like that, you will get a consequence for that choice, not for the emotion. And so we would talk about that. And so it was like then when they are having a temper tantrum and I would say, okay, it looks like you're letting your emotions take you for a ride. And if I could see them about to do something potentially dangerous, I would say, I want you to think about what you're going to do. Are you going to let your emotions take you for a ride? Are they in control or are you in control? And they would start to learn how to regulate their own emotions. But those, I think a lot of times, at least for me, and I won't speak for other moms, but big emotions tend to cause anxiety and scare me. And I just want to stop it. And that's my reaction. But if I can hold myself, and even to this day, if they're going through big things, if I can hold myself, stay calm and not let their emotion trigger an emotion in me and just stay calm, I tell you, Claire, it is the most beautiful motherhood moments I have ever had, because it's like in that moment where they're raw, they're soft, they're vulnerable, they open up in a way that allows us to connect so much deeper than if I just shut it down. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's when we have our bonding. And I would miss those moments if I just shut it down or if I allowed my fear to get in the way of like them expressing their emotions. So right. I think that's one really cool thing that's come out of it. But yeah, we haven't gotten into huge life crises yet because they are still little, but I just hope I can, because I am not perfect at it. And I often, you know, if I'm going through something and I do try to tell them like, hey, I feel really overwhelmed right now. And my kids have gotten really good because I will tell them like, mommy is really overwhelmed. It would really help me if you could sit and read for a minute so I could have some quiet to think. And so they'll be like, okay, mommy. And now if I tell them, I'm feeling pretty overwhelmed, they'll say, hey, what can I do? And I'll say, you know, it would really help me if you could play with your little brother for a minute. Okay, mommy. And it's like, they know I'm trying to regulate my emotions. And it's just, it's like this symbiotic, like I'm going to help you through your storm and you're going to help me through my storm. And it's not always perfect and it doesn't always look pretty. And sometimes it does result in a blow up or being frustrated or, you know, being unkind. But when we are able to find that balance, oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. And it's like, oh, I love it so much.
Yeah. I mean, it's that unconditional love, right? And if I think of any of the most powerful connections in my life, it's been that. It's been letting people witness me in my messiest, scariest times, mm-hmm. and then not pushing them away or not having them be like, whoa, too much. You know, like those are, that's the stuff. It's life. And it's, mm-hmm. and it's so scary to do that. And it's interesting how you say, you know, like you have to slow down in the moment when you're helping one of your kiddos through that so that your own emotions don't take you for a ride, which mm-hmm. would then be a choice where you'd have to bail. And the consequence of that would be like, you'd all be missing out. Right. And I'm sure it still happens. We all mm-hmm. have our days, but I think that's such a beautiful thing. And I was taught, you know, from my parents were taught the way they were taught, and that I certainly wasn't held and I didn't have people hanging out with me when I was throwing fits, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So we did really learn to shut that down. And I think that's really beautiful. It's inspiring. Oh,
it's so special. I do want to say, like, for moms who get overwhelmed, have anxiety, I completely understand. And if you are not able to catch yourself and you do have a big reaction or you miss that moment, just remember, it's not the end of the world, because we get so many opportunities every day to practice and to work on ourselves. But also, you're missing one moment out of millions. There will be another moment, and that's okay. But the biggest thing, I was talking to a dad actually the other day who was saying, like, man, I'm letting my daughter down. I blew up at her the other day and I'm just kicking myself. And I said, hey, what did you do after you blew up at her? And he said, well, I got down on her level. I apologized. I said, I was feeling stressed and it wasn't because of her, and I shouldn't have treated her that way. Cause he was saying, I'm bringing up the cycles of my childhood and I'm doing the same things. And I said, did your parents ever get down on your level and talk to you like a human? And he said, no. And I was like, so you're not bringing back those cycles. You're breaking the cycle. The fact, like, you blew up and then you explained it. I think it's so important that we don't shelter our kids from reality, from real emotions, from real situations, real conversations, but that we talk it through. That's what they're going to learn more than if, oh, mommy was perfect all the time. Like, that's not, and guess what? If you are perfect all the time, they're going to be in for a really rude awakening when they get to real world. It's not going to be helpful at all. So the bigger thing is, like, oh, mommy had a big emotion and here's how she walked through it. Oh, mommy got mad at me, but here's how she fixed it. And we always talk with our kids about, it's always relationship based. So it's like, if you hurt the relationship, the consequence will be you have to find a way to mend that relationship. So if you hurt your brother, what are we going to do to repair the relationship? And so I think that's the bigger thing is, like, are we working on that with our kids as we're disciplining, as we're teaching, as we're growing? Are we working on the relationship of, like, you are loved? And I remember my parents didn't have that. I mean, our parents, I don't think, had the resources and understanding we did. And hopefully we are evolving a little bit more and our children will evolve a little bit more. But I remember one time we were with a babysitter and we were playing with toys and one of my siblings took a toy and I started crying and the babysitter just looked at me and said, well, first she said, oh, she was playing with that. Can we please give that toy back? And my sibling was like, no. And I said, I don't want it anyway. And I started crying and she just looked at me and said, yeah, I know it's tough. I think it feels pretty bad when, you know, somebody takes something you were playing with. And I just, like, stopped crying and I was stunned because I was very small. I must have been 4, but nobody had talked to me like they understood or cared before. And I was like, what? It was always like, stop crying, like, you know, shh. And I remember, so even as I talk to my children that way, it's like, I remember how impactful it was for me. And so I try to remember that. And it's just, whew, it's a lot. It's hard. And we're not going to catch every moment. And we need to have grace about that. But what do we do after the moment? That's the big thing.
Yeah. And for me too, like all of the skills that I have that allow me to be in moments like that, they didn't just come because I, like, decided that that's how I was going to do it. I had to work on myself so much to be able to withstand my own emotions, like you're talking about.
100%.
Because I was totally, I'm still not comfortable with anger as, like, a healthy emotion. Like, I was taught that it was ridiculous and silly. And, like, if I got mad as a kid, I got teased. And so I still to this day, like, when people get really angry, I'm like, why are you being so silly? Like, and they're like, this isn't silly. So, you know, it's our own discomfort with these certain feelings that make it really hard to be with our kids when they're having them. And so having, learning how to, when our own things come up, just really be with them is, that's going to create the capacity to be with our kids in them, in my experience.
It's similar to what we talked about at the beginning of the podcast, where I said, for me, I had to come to the point in pain where I said, I don't care what my body is telling me or my emotions are telling me or this pain is telling me, I'm going to love. It was similar. I had to make that choice with my kids. Like, I will respond with love. I will respond in kindness. So if they come to me and I'm doing the dishes and I'm super stressed out, rather than, because my go-to was snapping, like, I don't have time, just snap, snap, snap. And so I would say, I will respond in kindness, and then I will handle my emotions on my own. It's not their job to handle my emotions. So when I am able, I do try to just respond in love, you know, quickly, or I don't know, honey, not now. And then, okay, I wanted to blow up or I wanted to snap. What brought that on? Oh, okay. I'm feeling overwhelmed because the kitchen is dirty. I still have the dishes. I'm running out of time. I don't want to put them down late to bed. But what happens if they go down a little bit later? You know, that's not the end of the world. And just like talk through it with myself as I'm doing the dishes, just 30 seconds, but to pause and reflect on my emotions as they come, let my brain process them, is a game changer.
Yes. Because the pattern before that for me was kiddo needed something. I snap. I feel like a bad mom. I shut down. It's like game over for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Including like the dishes getting done.
That's it. And call it a night.
So again, like just this voice that you've created for moms of kind of coming in and being like, listen, you're not a bad mom. It's just that mothering is really overwhelming.
It's a lot.
Hard and like beautiful, but also wonderful. And every day, all day. We're just
all
holding
emotions.
We're holding all of it. And it's like, what's the color of the moment, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a lot. So,
but if I could say even one thing, it would be like, I know moms say like, enjoy it. It's not going to last, but like truly enjoy the lows as much as you enjoy the highs, because them crying to you is not going to happen all the time. Them crying to you or having a fit or fighting with their brother is an opportunity. It's an opportunity for bonding and for a moment like, how did mom respond to that? You know, it's like every opportunity. If you miss them, that's fine. Move on. Don't kick yourself about it. Yeah. Move on. Forgive yourself. Give yourself as much grace as you would give them. And then hopefully you're giving them some grace. And then and then just wait for the next opportunity, right? It's like we are so blessed and lucky that we have thousands of opportunities to work on ourselves and to impact these little lives every single day. And when we shut it down and say, game over, I suck, then we are like we're missing out on so many beautiful moments that could happen after that, but we're actually reinforcing the I suck by shutting it down, snapping and leaving it there, you know, and we could be experiencing all of it. And just like the pain of labor, delivery and postpartum, it's like, it's all good. It's all beautiful. It's all life. Let's not shut down the parts that don't feel good.
Yeah, man, that's so good.
I love talking about motherhood.
I mean, but that those pieces are so important, and it's such a fine line between like setting too high of expectations for ourselves and just knowing that like with every single part of parenting, there's a learning curve. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that when we assume even in pregnancy that like baby's going to be born and we're going to like have it all figured out, if not right away, like surely in a couple weeks. You know,
sure,
and then it doesn't go like that. And then it's like, failure number one, failure number two, failure number three.
And they stack and stack and stack. Yeah.
And they stack, and it takes time to realize that like, that isn't the end. It's not the end. That can happen and you can feel like everything is stacked against you, and you can still just start small and learn how to do one little thing and have one little kindness and one little positive experience with a tantrum. And like, that's the way we change. It has to be like boots on the
gradual,
ground in it, you know?
Yeah. Because there was this, I can't even remember what book it's from, but a psychologist was talking to a mom who kept saying, I am a terrible mom. My kid needs this and he's not getting it. I am a terrible mom. And he would say, well, are you feeding him? Are you clothing him? Or yes, yes, yes. But I'm a terrible mom. Other moms do this. I am a terrible mom. And it was so self-centered on her that she actually was neglecting her child.
Yeah.
And so I think when we it's such a waste of emotions to allow mom guilt and a waste of energy that could be spent on being present, being with them, enjoying them. Like, and when we give all of our energy, our brain only has so much capacity to process so much. It takes 20% of our calories just to think. So it's like when we're using that to guilt ourselves, to beat up on ourselves, to let this mom guilt in, it's taking away actual energy that could be used for good or for pleasure or for joy. And so I think it's really important to talk to yourself. Don't listen to yourself all the time, but talk to yourself and say, no, I'm not a bad mom. Shut it down right there. No, I'm doing great. Or no, I don't have to think about that right now. You don't even have to negate the thought. Say, I'm not going to think about that right now. I'm going to go see if my son wants to go watch a movie or something. Like, mm-hmm. we don't have to think those thoughts. And sometimes it feels like we do. It feels like crisis, you know, like I have to think this because if I don't, then I'm a bad. And it's a cycle that we don't have to give into, you know?
Yeah. Like if I'm not condemning myself constantly, then I'm letting myself off the hook. And if I let myself off the hook, then I'm like making excuses when it's really just like you're saying, like it's a reinvestment of time and energy.
Yes.
This is maybe the positive. First Taylor Swift reference I've done on the podcast. Woot, woot. But when I was watching her, you know, like documentary, there's a part where she's talking about just learning to accept her body and growing into a healthier concept of what her body can be. And I just always think of this because she's like, I would start to have these thoughts about like, you know, like thinness and dieting, all these things. And then I would just say to myself, I'm going to change the channel. And she would just change the channel to something else. And for some reason, that helps me all the time because it's like this quick thing you're saying where I'm like, uh-oh, like I don't really like watching this channel. I'm going to switch channels. And it just makes it really simple. But if there are moms out there and parents out there who feel like there is no channel to switch, it's also important to get some help so you learn, you know, that there are other modes of thinking because sometimes we really can't just talk ourselves out of it. And I've been there and it is important, I think, to get support when it just feels like
I agree.
There's no other channel going on.
Right. Totally. Yeah. And if you can't get to therapy or you can't find a resource, a great thing to do is to serve. Love other people, turn it because we get into the spiral of our own head and it's all about us and our terrible decisions and me, me, me. And when you turn it outside of yourself, like call somebody and listen to their problems for a half hour. And I guarantee you, you will feel better. Right? Just listen, say, hey, do you need to talk? And just listen or go serve somebody, go love somebody else. Turn the focus off of yourself for a second and it will put everything in perspective.
Yeah. I do think that's really important. And I think it's one of those traps of depression is not feeling good enough to help anyone else, but really like, you don't really have to feel that good to just be together with someone and connection is so important. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, totally.
Gosh, I don't know what else.
That was really fun.
Both podcast people, we could probably go on for a long time, but, but yeah, so what are you guys, let's just do a quick little fun ending. What does summer look like for you guys in Utah? And the ages of your kids are 7 and 4
Well, 5 now. He just turned 5. So 7 and 5. So both boys are in summer camps. And then we are going to do a glacier trip this summer, which we're very excited about with grandpa and with their dad and everything. So that'll be fun. But yeah, it's just going to be kind of laying low, playgrounds, splash pads, friends, barbecues. We've been barbecuing so much. It's so fun.
Oh,
so
that is fun.
Lots of outdoor time. Yeah.
Is this your full time work now? Is doing book and the podcast? And
I wish. Yeah, no. I'm not quite. I am still working and I'm doing the book and the podcast and the Instagram and the blog part-time. And then I'm also an actor. So I'm doing all of that part-time. So I have 3 part-time jobs in addition to my full-time job of mothering. Yeah.
Yeah. Dang. So,
yeah. But yeah. I love it all. Yeah.
Well, so just a little shout out. If people want to find your book, your articles, your writing,
Totally. My blog is thedenmother.net. You can find all the articles and resources. We also have mental health resources, breastfeeding resources, all that kind of things on there. You'll also be able to purchase the book, Motherhood is Big Enough, as well as mugs and other things on that website. You can also find the book on Amazon. The podcast is called The Den Mother Podcast, and you can download it wherever you listen to podcasts. And my Instagram is @the_kittyakee if you want to find me and say hey.
Yay. And just quick side note, Brooke, our producer, who I rant about all the time on the podcast, is part of Den Mother. So
she is my co-host. Yes. She's awesome.
So listeners, if you want to hear wonderful work that Brooke does outside of behind the scenes, in front of the scenes. Go check that out.
Yeah. She's awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks so much for being here.
Oh, my pleasure. This was so fun. Thanks, Claire.
Thank you to our incredible editor and producer, Brooke Boone Miller, for sharing her gifts with us. She's a mom and she gets it, and for that we are so grateful. If you are seeking supportive parenting resources, please visit hmhb-lifts.org, an online guide meant to connect Montana families to services and programs throughout the state. It's okay not to be okay. Help is within reach, and you don't have to go this alone. We promise. And if Mother Love speaks to you as much as we hope it does, please consider supporting this project by subscribing to the podcast, sharing it with your network, and/or writing us a quick review. We are passionate about getting these stories out into the world, and we need you to help us spread the word. Oh, and just one more thing. We know a lot of moms who are really fired up about creating change in the maternal healthcare world. If you feel inspired to make a donation to this movement, please go to hmhb-mt.org/donate or click the link in the show notes. Even just a $5 or $10 donation can make a huge difference. Imagine a future where mothers and caregivers feel supported, seen, and heard as they carry out the most important work of their lives.